Hello, you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm Tom Rowe, and we are sitting here now with George Quasha, who is going to present his Speaking Portraits project today. And we're going to visit with many artists from the Hudson Valley and ask them what art is, live here from Wave Farm in Acre, New York. You're listening on Free 103.9 online radio and WGXC 90.7 FM in upstate New York. And for the next 6 hours, George Quasha is going to ask artists what art is, and we'll hear also artists you've previously asked what art is. George, are you have you done this on the radio before?
I've never done this. Well, I haven't done it directly on the radio, but it was on the radio. It was on the PS1 radio station back in, I think, 2003, pretty much a year or so after I began the project. I had done the preliminary volume one of Art Is, and they decided to make it a radio piece, which worked pretty well. Problem was there, you didn't know who was speaking. You had to look on the internet on their website to know who was speaking at that moment. Yeah.
So today we're going to talk to artists live, and they'll tell us who they are speaking, and then you're going to play some of the clips before, and you're going to introduce them at the end after the artist speaks.
Yeah, I'm going to say who has just spoken. One of the principles of the piece is that it's not art historical. It's not art criticism. It's not even art definition. It's really the state of discourse in which a person tries to say something that is essential to themselves, but is ultimately impossible to say in a final way. So it's really how each individual artist approaches the question.
How did you come up with this concept, or what got you thinking about what art is?
Well, it actually, that's almost impossible to answer, because it came to me in a flash. That no one had ever done this, that it was somehow an obvious thing for someone to do, but as far as I was aware, no one had ever done it. And the point was not that no one had ever asked people to say what art is, it's that no one had asked a lot of artists to say it in a way that didn't pertain particularly only to the work that artist was doing. So I let artists tell me about what they're doing. I'm very interested in that, and I will do that on the radio today because it contextualizes what the statement is. But in the piece itself, which is not a documentary, it's an artwork meant for installation, I interview people, or I actually don't call them interviews. They're really sessions. They're really moments in which I inquire with the person into the nature of art. And it's really a conversation between us. And I really try to get people not to over prepare. I mean, it's hard to get, you can't say don't think of a white elephant, but they will prepare. But the point is, I try to distract them from their preparation and to get them down to a really natural and poignant expression of what's really true for that artist, that person. Part of my motivation is to, in some degree, take this out of the hands of the art historians, the critics, and the curators, and put it back in the hands of the artists, because I really don't think that that curators and historians and critics necessarily understand the artist's point of view. Even when they're artists themselves, when they switch into critic mode or art historical mode, they quickly forget the subtle distinctions that are true for them as individuals. And I really think that art is endlessly definable myself according to the presentation of each person, just as each artwork has something there you really can't generalize about. People try, and of course they think categorically, which is one of the problems. I want people to think specifically, want to be inside the point of view of what it is to make art and that critical edge for that person that's always there. I want to see if I can bring that into the discourse. And I really select a person might talk for 20 seconds, they might talk for an hour. I let them talk as much as they want to talk, and I keep it going as long as it's alive. And then I select 2 minutes, 3 minutes from that. But the criterion is really where the person comes most alive, to try to say what is most true for that person. I try to capture that in the voice. It's something that interests me anyway. They call speaking portraits, and they're not the only kind of speaking portraits I do. I have the conviction that a person's full being can come into the voice, in that there are moments when a person is powerfully expressed in their voice, and I try to capture that.
Have you been surprised by any responses, or what have you been most surprised about?
I'm often surprised. I would say I probably generally expect to be surprised, because I work the person to the point where, and this may have been happened today, because the tension of being on the radio may alter the nature. This is one of the part of this experiment for me, why I actually was interested in doing this, because I'd like to find out to what extent this can be done, as it were, publicly. Because I get into a fairly intimate state of discourse with people, and I have to win their trust in order for them to go to a place in their speech where they're willing to finally talk just as themselves and not be thinking, oh, someone's going to be judging my view of art in the future, which puts tension in the voice and puts that cognitive framing in the voice, and all of which I'm trying to avoid. And that's something that's not easy to do. And I have a good question as to whether, with the time constraints of doing radio, which is its own art form, this is an art form within an art form, as it were, whether I can actually bring that out. I'm not sure I can. It'll be interesting to find out. I mean, it will be interesting no matter what. It always is. But the question is, will you get that quality of voice? See, I have to do a lot of editing to find that normally. Because people will say all kinds of intellectually interesting things, but this is not about that. If you're going to get it down to 2 minutes, their 40 minutes discourse on the nature of art may not all be that interesting from this point of view. From another, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You were talking about how this might be altered by the radio. I'm also wondering, I mean, the piece is meant for video, you said. It's really meant as an installation.
Right.
So how do you think... Why is the video element important? Because it's just basically people talking. So what's the importance of the video?
Yeah, the camera frames the face in the center of the box. There's no, I don't show the person's work in the background. I don't show you what they're wearing as little as possible. I try to not have their statements contextualized. I want it to be pure speech. And one of the reasons why I put the name at the end rather than at the beginning, is so person's mind doesn't go into art historical mode. Oh, this is going to be Marina Abramović. Let's hear what she's got to say about art. Of course we're interested in that, but I'd like you to hear the voice first. Say, what is that weird person saying, and what is this going on in this person's voice? And then you say, oh, that was Marina Abramović. That causes a cognitive disjuncture.
Well, you have to deal with the information first rather than your idea of what the information is.
Right, and answering your question in that respect, what is information? Information visually registered is different from information auditorially registered. Quite different, actually. You know, we all have the experience of getting to know somebody on the telephone and then meeting them and wondering how could that be the same person I've just fantasized about.
Listening to the radio, and you think the DJ looks a certain way, and then
exactly,
it,
yeah,
they're maybe. Usually hideous freaks.
Right, exactly. But my contention is that, based on this experience, especially, but I always thought this, that. And linguists confirm that a huge part of human communication is actually in the face. The voice is actually a delimitation of information. And in that respect, very specially interested, allowing the mind to fantasize, to create its own picture, to configure the reality according to one's own...
So it's space. More of a filter?
It's not about... I wouldn't call it a filter. I would call it what we actually do in constructing reality. Well, there's vast information that we select out of, whether we're using eyes, ears, nose, or whatever, any of our senses. We select what we try to select what pleases us most or what interests us most.
Or what we need, I guess.
Or what we need, and what interests us to play with, if it's a playful kind of thing. Like the radio is basically a playful thing, except in a storm, you're not listening to it for vital information, or maybe the news. But you're really configuring reality in an auditory way, which I think is powerful, and I'm a big, big fan of radio in that respect. I really think radio has a profound role to play in terms of keeping alive our ability to register reality in an auditory way. People are very visual now, and increasingly so. And, of course, they're looking at screens all the time in addition to that. So
there's a whole acoustic ecology movement that's kind of reacting to that.
I think it's a powerful thing to do and very important to do. On the other hand, there is the reality that we do regardless of how we are going in terms of media. When we meet a person, a huge amount of the information comes in through the eyes. They're gesturing, they're micro emotions that are showing in the face, that Paul Ekman was a great specialist in showing, that people are giving mixed messages all the time. They're secretly saying what they really feel while they give the smile that wants to control the situation in some way. Most of language is control. Most of what we do socially is that we're controlling reality with language, because that's what we're doing all the time anyway. We're doing as much as possible to control reality, have a good time, avoid pain, as Freud said. And so basically, there's a lot of information there. And when you look at Ardia's online, you can find it at quasha.com, quasha.com. Art is, music is, and poetry is are all... Volume 1 is online, and is Volume 2 of Artists as well. They're about an hour each, and each will go anywhere from 33 to 60 poets, artists, or musicians in each of those pieces. And the next volumes going online, is Art is West Africa as well. And it's amazing how much of the information is really in the face. It's kind of astounding. So when people say, I guess people are saying, what are the five things that people say? I refuse to answer that question. I don't think like that. I didn't construct the project to drag it back into the usual abstractions that we make. I think of each of these people as individual. Their message is their own. And I focus on that. And when I'm editing it, when I'm talking to them, I'm trying to draw out what is most singularly that person's reality. And it's there. It's there. You can see it. You can see it. You can hear it. You can find it. And to me, that recontextualizes the whole of art, which tends to move into category. Oh, that person's a cubist, or that person's a conceptualist, or that, you know, person's an impression. These are that, you know, when you look at the work, that's a distraction from the power of the individual work. Art has gone very much in the direction of the conceptual, because art history, to some extent, gives us a pre-digested picture of what art is. I'm a big fan of reading art history, and I'm a big opponent of using that as the measure, the means by which we experience art. So I want to go back to, as it were, the horse's mouth, and try to find out what happens when we don't know who's speaking, and we're really just listening to what's being said, in whatever way it comes to us. And people do all kinds of crazy things in this project. I've had one person who can't be on the radio because he stared at the camera and didn't say a word. That was his contribution to what art is. Fair enough. All fine with me. I don't care what they do, as long as it's real for themselves. You know, sometimes it's...
Has it been performative? I mean, a small number
of people have done actual performances, one of whom is Marina Abramović, actually, but it was a performance very true to how she thinks and speaks about art. She went into a trance, actually. I let her lean back in her chair, and I put the camera way up high so it would go down at an angle, and you couldn't tell that you're not looking straight on at her, except that she looks kind of weird, like she's a little bit, her eyes kind of glaze over. You'll hear even that in the voice when it's on today, and I will play that one. But it's not the same as looking into those eyes of Marina, who's a very beautiful woman, but she has this great power in her face, and when she goes into a trance, it's an amazing thing to see. She does that stuff as part of her art form.
You were talking about how the video is important and the how people talk with their faces and their eyes. You talk to people from many different cultures. Was that language kind of universal, or did it differ by culturally, or by people that spoke different languages, or?
Well, Paul Ekman's contention is that emotions are universal, and he's fairly well demonstrated that certain micro expressions of contempt, say, or shame, come out in very much the same way, or would be they tried tests, and they had people in villages in Africa recognize the micro emotions of people in from Western societies. That doesn't prove that they're all universal, and that there aren't local conventions. That certainly there are, and it can be very confusing. But there is a great deal of it that is somewhat universal. However, question of universals in language is highly contested area, but it is not settled science at all. You know, I've done 1,000 of these now. I filmed 1,000 people in 11 countries in 21 languages. Over the last 10 years, starting in 2002. And I am really not able to make too many generalizations about it. I mean, not that I want to.
It doesn't sound like you want to.
I don't really want to. Yeah. And probably that's a good reason. Probably you put any kind of social scientist or anthropologist on this thing, and they would come up with conclusions right and left.
You imagine years in the future someone finding this project and making kind of assumptions about our era or art or something in the future.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting. It's already the future for me because it's been 10 years, and I filmed people in countries that I don't even remember I filmed them. You know, cause after you filmed 1,000 people in 11 countries, and some of them under very pressured circumstances, like a biennial where a person comes in every 15 to 20 minutes, and I film a lot of people in a day, and you get these long names that you know you're not familiar with. You forget. Yeah. So
I think we're almost ready to get started here.
Yeah.
It looks like.
Yeah, we're getting there, yeah. We've got our first victim is already in the room, trembling in her boots.
Trembling in her boots
because she thinks that we're going to ask her impossible questions, and of course we are. We're going to, all of her worst fears will be true. No, I'm just kidding. This is a gentle project.